Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Lowdown. Today I'm absolutely delighted to be joined by Mr. Adam Moy. Adam, big warm welcome to the show.
Connor, thanks for having me on. It's been a little bit of a wait, and we've been going back and forth, but I'm super excited to have the conversation with you, connect with you again after a few long months. And yeah, honored to be on the show alongside so many just amazing guests that you've had. So thanks for having me.
Oh, 100%. And thank you for accepting the invitation. I believe we have a lot to speak of from our time over working together at FC London and Canada, time together speaking about the podcast, speaking about all things football. So, I mean, we're better to get right stuck into it. You know, the first question is, I don't know if I need to ask, but Adam, could you please take us through your earliest football memory?
Yes, I knew this one was coming on, and I've got two, really. I've got the first football memory, and I was born and raised in the States. First 8 years of my life was in the US. And, you know, the soccer culture, the football culture wasn't too big, mostly American football. And being in Milwaukee, the Green Bay Packers were the big ones. So I didn't have any cable TV or channels that had football on, or soccer, I should say, to make the distinction on. So it was just me and my brother in the backyard playing in 1v1. And, you know, thankfully I have an older brother that played soccer and got me hooked onto the game. And just from, you know, 3, 4 years old, we're in the backyard, and we used to have this hole at the back of the garden that it was just 1v1, and whoever could get the ball into the hole won that little round. So we didn't even have a goal. We didn't even have a net. It was just, you know, me and my brother playing. So that was the first one. And then the second one, and the one that, you know, I was kind of thinking about this earlier today and yesterday about, like, what was the first moment that really stuck with me on TV? And it was when I was in grade 4 in 2006. It was the World Cup, obviously. And again, I still didn't have cable channel. I didn't have any access to really, you know, other than YouTube once in a while and looking at Ronaldo or Kaká or Messi and seeing what was happening with all the rising stars. It was in the library at my school. And they were showing, they had the record, they had the game on. It was Argentina versus Serbia and Montenegro, a country that doesn't even exist anymore. 6-0 win, I believe it was, for Argentina. And the one that stuck with me was Esteban Cambiaso's goal, the 24 pass sequence where he finished it off. And, you know, I think just reflecting back, I don't know, maybe subconsciously that's kind of shaped my view of football, even though Argentina has not really been a team until the recent World Cup and stuff that I really followed and fell in love with. But that moment of just how they manipulated the ball, how they kept the ball, how they valued possession to just end up with that brilliant goal, you know, maybe shaped my philosophy of football a little bit and how I like playing the game and view the game.
An interesting one, and it makes perfect sense to me when I add a little known fact about yourself that you've also represented a Canadian national team, albeit on the futsal stage. So that makes perfect sense too. And I think for even more context, you know, something I didn't quite understand too is an Irishman moving to Canada, where you grew up in Winnipeg, Manitoba. There's a lot of indoor soccer. There's a lot of futsal to be played year-round basis because of the weather.
Yeah, and, you know, it wasn't necessarily even termed futsal when we played. It was literally just soccer inside of a gym with a big yellow fuzzy ball. And, you know, the ball was flying everywhere, off the ceiling, off the walls. But, you know, it definitely, you know, made me fall in love with the sort of indoor variant of the game as well. And then later on, when I was probably about 11 or 12 years old, futsal started sort of creeping into our environments, and there was little leagues that popped up. And, you know, whether or not we played with the exact futsal rules, but the concept was definitely there, and small sided games, and it was massive. And then in 2010, I believe it's when Manitoba first got their big indoor 11 side facility where we could really start training more or less properly all year round. But still, everywhere in Canada, I'm in Newfoundland right now, and, you know, there's limited resources. The weather is very hit and miss, and sometimes it's snowing, sometimes it's raining, sometimes it's sunny. So you've got to be a little bit creative and use some of the factors and the context to your advantage. And again, just being growing up and seeing that Argentina goal and then playing in small side environments, like that's what I love. I love being on the ball. I love players that want to be on the ball. I love teams that want to keep the ball and progress. So it's definitely sort of maybe all sort of combined together and know, as you say, it's easier to link the dots going backwards than it is forwards. So again, 100%.
And it's an interesting one too, because what people may not know, I mean, you've touched upon it there. You've led several high performance programs all throughout the country of Canada, which is a huge country, by the way, it's the second largest in the world in terms of geography, all done by the age of 27. So coaching's been a full-time gig for you for an awful long time. Just curious, where did a coaching bug come into play?
I think just the concept or the notion of me wanting to stay in football was always there. So when I was playing, I was always had sort of a natural or a knack of leadership. I was often the captain of my team, the provincial teams I was part of, the Canada Games team where I was playing a year up. I was the associate captain for that group. So always had sort of maybe a knack or a natural sort of leadership ability. And then so sort of started just transitioning out of the game a little bit, and life circumstances, you know, made me stop playing at sort of the high performance level, you know, when I was graduating high school. And I was lucky enough to be invited to coach a provincial team that was a U16 group. So I assistant coached that team with a fellow named Paul Thompson, who had a massive role actually in my journey as a coach. He brought me onto the coaching staff for that team, and literally 2 months before, I had just been playing with some of those players in the high performance center that was called NDC in Manitoba. So got that experience, and then just loved it. And then I was lucky enough, Paul moved on from the club he was at Winnipeg South End United to go to Manitoba Soccer, and he recommended me to take his position as assistant technical director with Winnipeg South End United. And Hayden, the technical director, who's still there and he's been there for a long time, another one of my mentors and friends and colleagues, you know, gave me the opportunity, only 18 years old. And here I was, you know, sort of living my dream, working full time in football. And then it's just been ever since. So nearly 10 years full time now working in the game.
It's an interesting one too, because I know we've spoken about this in the past, right? In terms of backgrounds and profiles that go into coaching. And obviously the last few years we've seen an influx of former professional players, especially goalkeepers. And it's very intriguing to see their own philosophy about how they shape the game. What I'm curious to learn a bit more about yourself, Adam, is did you think having that international flavor growing up watching football, seeing a game that was all being nearly too far away from yourself, playing an exotic game of futsal, was it a case of you knew there had an awful lot of knowledge to impart onto players? And there's always that piece of how do you bring that from knowledge to comprehension?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's a bit twofold in my opinion. It's the passion and just being curious and staying hungry. Again, finally, I think I was in about grade 6 or grade 7 where we got Goal TV, and then I fell in love with the great Barcelona team, you know, that won the Champions League, and Xavi was my favorite player, and Xavi, Iniesta, Busquets in midfield. I was just infatuated with how they played the game, and I'd sit there and I'd jot down every single time Xavi touched the ball, and almost created little heat maps on sheets of loose leaf, you know, and then I'd look at all the scores and standings, and every project that I have was around football. So there was just that curiosity piece that sort of resonated with me. And then it was like, well, if I'm curious, maybe there's other curious people out there. So, you know, you start talking to players, you start coaching players, and they're like, oh, this is kind of neat. This is a bit different. You know, how can I do this? But then there's the piece of you only know what you know, right? So having some experience in different environments, but also being very, very lucky to have good mentors and good friends and good colleagues that I connect with that are like, hey, actually this is happening over here. Or, you know, this is how, you know, we might do it based on our current context. So again, going back to my first job at Winnipeg South End United, like the first 2 years in that job, when I started taking sort of some formal coach education and my, it was a pre-B at that time, and then a provincial B, and then my national B. I had that piece, but I also had Hayden, who was a phenomenal mentor and taught me so much about football and how he viewed football. And it still definitely impacts how I coach today for sure. But then as well, how he interacted with people and how he started thinking about creating different programs and systems. So I think it's a little bit twofold of like, listen, I was curious, and then I was lucky enough to meet other curious people who were willing to lend a hand, you know. And then from Hayden, it goes like a guy like Paul Thompson, and then a guy like Yanni, who both of us worked with in London, you know, Rob Gale, one of my former coaches who's with Portland Thorns right now. And then yourself, who's always willing to talk football and is the football encyclopedia himself. So there's always so many different avenues to sort of stay curious and get curious. And then hopefully I can use some of those experiences and knowledge to help pass on to players and staff that I'm working with.
And obviously, Adam, what you spoke of there, I mean, finding people as curious and as passionate as yourself in regards to the game, it can be very tough and it can be very challenging in a country as big as Canada, where there's so many options, you know, for kids, for adults to be doing all over. And obviously, the game itself of soccer, it's a growing sport and it's not without its challenges, especially in a country as big. How would you best describe the environment for soccer nationwide?
Nationwide, it's a big question, Connor, and I don't know if you can sort of sum it up in just one paragraph or one sentence, because like you mentioned, it's so different. And I've been fortunate enough to literally work coast to coast, and then, you know, a few central places in between. Like you mentioned, I was in Winnipeg, working for a youth club there, Winnipeg South End United. Then I worked for the provincial body, at Manitoba Soccer. I moved out west, worked in southeastern BC. Then I moved out to Vancouver Island, where I was working for a club there as the technical director. And then now I find myself in Newfoundland, the other side of the country. Before Newfoundland, stopped in London, Ontario, to work with, you know, yourself and Yanni at London TFC and FC London. So I've been very, very lucky to have experienced so many different pieces and get so much different experiences. But the soccer culture is one that I would say is growing, one that there's a lot of passionate people. You just have to find them. But the contexts are completely different. And like you alluded to before, the environments and the landscapes are completely different in Winnipeg, and in London, and here in Newfoundland. You've got to use indoor facilities for at least 4 to 6 months out of the year. You know, in BC, on the coast of BC, they don't even really have indoor facilities. And it's programming 11 months out of the year outdoors. And sometimes, you know, it's -4 and or 4 degrees and it's raining, but you're still outdoors, right? And even the seasons are different. They're not the same time or same time span of season. So having sort of a one encompassing word or sentence for what the culture is like, I would say that word would be different. That would be what it is. And I think that's also what is the great thing about Canada and the diversity of cultures, landscapes, people. I know we were messaging the other day back and forth, and you're asking how my experience in Newfoundland was. And the football culture here is phenomenal. Like, it is truly, truly phenomenal. And, you know, I'm sitting in a local youth tournament, 13-year-old kids, and it's only teams from Newfoundland. So all these players know each other, all the parents know each other. And the final had 350 people there. And it was like, holy man. Like, it wasn't like Barcelona's come and played our U13s. It was, you know, just two local clubs playing, and people just love it here, right? And it almost has that European, Irish sort of English feel to it here. And a lot of Irish descendants, obviously, in Newfoundland. So there's that kind of culture. And then you've got, you know, we were speaking right before the podcast started, and we started recording about when I was in Comox. And then you've got a culture of just a lot of multi-sport athletes, a lot of players that love sports and love the game, but also love doing outdoor activities and going skiing and hiking and going into the ocean and boating and fishing and all these kind of things. So it's so different. And I think that's where I've had a lot of learnings and a lot of growth myself, moving from one place to another place, is like, you just got to find out what the culture is. You got to really embrace that culture, and then you got to meet the people where they're at. And if you don't do that, you're going to be in for a tough run.
It's an interesting one because what I'd like to touch on a bit more there is obviously you've acknowledged how big and how breadth, basically the breadth of the levels is in Canada and how rare and the variance there. But in terms of someone whose background is largely to do with youth development, and you've transitioned into leadership positions as a result of that competence, Adam, I mean, how do you best support those players once you're transitioning from environment to environment? Because as you spoke of there, like there's a huge difference between being tasked with the mandate of making a program accessible versus just high performance.
That's a great question. And again, my learnings, I think, have been the biggest in terms of, first and foremost, is submerge yourself in the culture. Try to figure out what system structure and processes are already present, and then see how you can build and how you can grow from there. I think I've made mistakes in the past in terms of, having ideas and having these ideas of grandeur and, okay, look, I want to do this, I want to do that. But either, the players or the coaches you're working with just maybe don't have that same idea or don't have the same idea of how to get there. And then as well, sometimes the context and the constraints that you've got just aren't there in terms of what you want to do. So now it's about how do you be creative? So really trying to meet the player where they're at and the staff where they're at is critical. So first and foremost, look at the culture, look at the context, look at what you have available. Then try to figure out as well, what do the players want? What do the coaches want? And how can you best support? And then I do think that there's a piece of like, how do you just make sure that you are adding that little bit of push, that little bit of pressure to take that next step? Because that next step can be scary and some people want to follow, some people don't want to follow. But if you don't try to take that next step, I think there's a lot of people that are happy just sort of where they're at and a little bit complacent. So if you're not one spearheading that and really trying to enhance the experience of the youth player, of the youth athlete and the coaches that are working with them, I have found that there can be, again, a little bit of complacency or, hey, listen, this is kind of what we are, who we are, as opposed to really trying to embrace like some challenges. And especially as you noted, I've done most of my work in smaller spaces. Comox is not a 70,000 people. Before Comox, I was in Cranbrook, 17,000 people. Here I'm in Newfoundland, which has a less of a population than all of Winnipeg together, Newfoundland and Labrador, right? So you've got different places where there's sort of this idea of like, oh, we're just Newfoundland and Labrador. Like if we're running a program and maybe if we have a half decent showing at a competition or Atlantic's tournament or Canada Games, that's kind of good enough and we're happy. Just because they've always sort of just been told that they're just Newfoundland and Labrador, they're just Comox, as opposed to, hey, like let's use what we've got available to us and really try to make this experience the best it possibly can and strive as best as we possibly can. And sort of use that David and Goliath reference. Like, how can David beat Goliath? Like, how can Newfoundland beat Ontario? How can Newfoundland and Labrador beat Quebec? How can we make sure that we are on levels of their magnitude? And then further than that, that's only talking about in Canada. You've traveled the world and have seen so many different experiences. This is only Canadian based. So how can we make sure that we're competing as Canada on the world stage, right? So I think there's just this piece of really trying to, again, figure out where you are, figure out what people want, and then figure out how to best push and support the people that you're working with.
I think an emergence team, which I've noticed from my travels and doing this podcast, is something which you allude to there. And it's, quite often the best leaders necessarily don't have to have the best technical, tactical competence. But what they are in the set is they are the best storytellers. It's the framing of that journey. And it's not having that huge, hearty goal at the end of it, but it's framing it and crystallizing it down into bite-sized chunks. And that's something that we spoke of before the podcast. How do you distinguish between high performance, high performing, and in turn motivate that workforce?
Yeah, and it's always a good conversation, a good debate to have. And again, working in various various places, and again, coast to coast, you've seen this sort of emergence of, everyone's going to term things elite or high performance or use these buzzwords just to try to get players into their programs and sort of use that as a bit of a means to an end, as opposed to, again, really seeing where they're at and where their programming is, and just trying to be the most high performing program that they can be. And just because you're not high performance doesn't mean, in my opinion, that you can't be high performing. So high performing, in my opinion, is making sure you're doing the little things right, making sure that you've got clear and concise communication, making sure you've got clarity in the direction where the program wants to go, and then making sure that, again, you're supporting the coaches and players with what they need. So in terms of that high performing piece, you know, that's something that I think needs to maybe have more of a conversation around Canada and possibly North America or the world, as opposed to just like, hey, listen, we're high performance because we say we are. And then I think in terms of those high performing pieces, like making sure that you're inspiring people to be as high performing as they can be every single day. So what can I do to impact the coaches that I'm working with so that they can give that little bit of extra to the players that they're going to be working with? What can I do to make sure that the program is robust and sustainable to, again, allow the players to be having the best possible experience, right? In my current context, we've got what we've sort of said, you know, is the NLSA Indoor Performance Center. And it's, you know, the highest program within the province right now. But still, we only see the players twice a week. So, and they're training on more or less a quarter pitch. You know, so would I ever call it a high performance program? No. But have I hopefully done things to make it higher performing? I truly believe I have. Some of those things are as simple as, you know, making sure, like I said, I send out a weekly communication to the parents and players as to what we're going to be working on that week. I also have a video primer every single week that allows the players to gain a little bit of inspiration from best practice clips or some, you know, top level coaches in terms of, hey, listen, look, this is what they're working on, you know, in Liverpool or at Brighton or wherever that may be. And we're kind of working on the same thing. Simple things such as making sure that the coaches have been getting clear session plans, you know, 2 to 3 days in advance, because the context here is the coaches that I'm working with and have the privilege to work with don't have necessarily time to make session plans. Or if you send it the day of, like, they're working people, they might not have time to be as prepared as they possibly can be before the session. So a simple thing for me is send it 3 to 4 days in advance. They've got the weekend or a few days to look at it, and they can be clear and very, very ready for what is to come. Right. And then, you know, we've done some meetings. We've made sure that we've had some reviews. You know, the winter break provided a nice point in time for us to get some feedback from coaches and say, hey, listen, what's working well? What should we look at doing differently? And how have they been enjoying the program? Right. So I think that's, for me, that's the biggest piece is what can I do? What can I control to make sure that I am being as high performing as possible? And then have that sort of trickle down effect onto the coaches and then onto the players and families that you're impacting.
It's interesting for leadership. I find it's the leader follower dynamic. And it's something you touched upon earlier on in terms of being a follower. You always found it was difficult, but after a while, there are people out there that are as equally passionate and curious as you, you know, over the wider game of soccer. Just curious now, you know, in your evolution to leadership position, Adam. And you could be in a place where, such as you are now, where, as you alluded to, there's people working full-time jobs. You know, how do you, as a leader in your own environment, identify undervalued and hidden potential in terms of that curiosity and that passion for the game of soccer itself?
Yeah, the identification piece is massive. And I think the biggest thing that I look for and the biggest thing that I, you know, want to surround myself with is positive people that just exude energy and have, you know, they give me energy, they give the players energy, they really enhance the experience for the players because of just how positive they are. I think the football comes second, to be quite honest. And that's just what I've recognized in my journey thus far, and something that we've spoken about off air as well, in terms of really making sure that the people that you're working with are at the forefront of everything. And then the product or the football itself, you know, will grow and emerge from there. So first and foremost, it's, you know, finding good people and finding people that truly care. And how do I see if people truly care? Those are the people that are, you know, sending me little clips or little messages and asking about, oh, how did the session go today? Or, you know, this is a little reflection without you even asking them. Like, they want to be there. They want to enhance the program. You know, they're the people that when you say, listen, the session starts at 4 o'clock, they're there at 3:30 or 3:40, making sure they're clear on the details, making sure that they're helping with the setup, making sure that they're there to greet the players and say hi to the players. So you've got those pieces of sort of the little intangibles that the football is not even necessarily there. Then when the football starts becoming more prevalent in terms of, hey, what are they getting curious about? What are they learning? And then how do you help push them outside their comfort zone? And are they willing to take that step? You know, I've worked with coaches that are, you know, very, very content to kind of just take, I don't want to say a backseat because their role is super, super important, but you know, they're happy for me to do the session introduction and talk about the theme and talk about, you know, what sort of global principles or team tactical principles we're going to look at or what skill sets and player habits are going to be very, very prevalent in the session. And sometimes I'll just throw it on them and be like, hey, you know, Coach X, do you want to do it today? And now there's a culture of like, hey, actually this is a chance to grow and improve and maybe get a little bit of feedback. And at the end of the day, what's the worst thing that can happen? Nothing. Like nothing is the worst thing that can happen. You say something a little bit wrong and you learn and grow from it. So it's just about really, again, finding good people, finding people that were the intangibles of, you know, showing up and really just being that high performing person. Making sure their communication, making sure they're clear on what they need to do, and then, you know, helping them grow. So that's what I look for in terms of sort of the hidden talent and the amount of stuff I learn from coaches and I grasp from coaches that, you know, quote unquote, work under me, even though I don't see it like that, is amazing. And probably they don't even know half the stuff that they teach me as well. So it is quite fascinating and you know, to try to uncover some of that hidden talent and hidden potential.
It's an interesting one because what you speak of there is such a wide remit, you know, as opposed to the actual game of football itself. And people don't understand is, well, typically in football at least, will rise in terms of leadership positions, director positions, you know, evaluated as opposed to your technical, tactical performance. But there's obviously a lot more to it and keeps you in the game for a longer and significant period of time. So I'd be curious to learn a bit more, and I know this is something that we've spoken about before, in terms of influences from outside of football. What have you been looking at to grow yourself, not only as a leader, but also as an individual?
Yeah, there's a few things. You know, I've taken some sort of, I don't know if you call them courses or little workshops around sort of emotional intelligence. I do have a business degree as well. So the business side of things and possibly looking to, you know, get my MBA at some point to really help the business organizational knowledge or side of things and increase my knowledge on that to really sort of complement the technical tactical football pillar is massive. I enjoy reading now a lot as well and learning from top leaders that you know, don't necessarily have anything to do with football. And, you know, I mentioned David and Goliath and Malcolm Gladwell is someone who I really enjoy the books. Simon Sinek, I've enjoyed a lot of his books as well. And in particularly The Infinite Game, talking about how, like, listen, this isn't a race to the finish line. The finish line is forever moving and there is really no finish line. So how can, you know, I look at that in terms of some of the programs that I'm trying to build or spearhead to, you know, not have things always be a means to an end, but like, how can we make sure that this is just creating better people for society and just growing and, you know, sort of leaving things in a better place than when you found them. So I would say from the outside perspective, that's what, you know, is I'm interested in and curious in and some of the avenues that I've looked to grow myself. As well, you know, just connecting with other people, connecting with people like yourself, Johnny, you've had on the podcast is very, very big into emotional intelligence and leadership, and has got a great app now that he's launched. So, you know, doing things like that and connecting with people is massive, in terms of sort of that informal growth. And I think, you know, that question comes at not a better time right now, because I'm in a space right now where I think there's a lot of great growth on the football side, and the organizational operational side of things sometimes seems, from my own perspective, is possibly lacking a little bit. And I'm just thinking like, oh man, like how can I best help that side of things, ensuring that the programs that I'm running are still sustainable? Because at some point, the business and organization side of things is going to hold back the football side of things. So I think tandem growth is imperative and essential. And looking across the country, having conversations with leaders and directors across the country, I think there's a common theme there. And based on some of my past experiences, it does seem like there has been a common theme. So again, I'm not going to say that that's the scope that I want to dive into at this stage in my career, but I am definitely interested in the organizational business aspect of football as well. And possibly if the time comes and it's like, hey, I think that maybe that needs a bit of a bigger push and some more help, maybe it's something that I'll dive into a little bit more myself and start leaning that direction as opposed to the technical, tactical on-field side of things.
And obviously right now, I mean, there's no better time, as you alluded to. I mean, in less than 2 years' time now, a home World Cup in North America. You know, as someone who's been, suppose, that has had a wide affinity in Canadian soccer, from playing a game at such a young age to being in a privileged position which you are now working for a provincial body, what do you hope the lasting legacy would be for the 2026 North American World Cup on Canadian soil?
Lasting legacy is I would just love it to continue to grow and see the sport grow and provide opportunities for players, coaches, administrators, referees, the whole environment and whole landscape. And I think it will do that. I'm hopefully looking on the positive side of things. And I think, it's only going to inspire more and more people to be involved in the beautiful game and really use it as a tool to grow themselves. I think for far too long, and possibly it's been just maybe too exponential of a growth in terms of the professionalization of football and a lot more paid TD roles and paid roles within clubs. But I think even when I started out my journey only 10 years ago, there was people that were like, "Well, football, you're working in football, like that's not a job," and you just kind of continue to persevere with it because you loved it, even though the pay might not have been great, or you had a lot of different volunteer gigs, and you're getting stretched, and you're cutting the grass, and you're doing a whole bunch of different things that you're only doing because you want it to work. Now there's so many opportunities and so much growth within the game, so I'm hoping that the World Cup, the lasting legacy, is just more opportunities for players, coaches, administrators, and growing the game nationally for sure. So I'm excited to see where that sort of falls, and hoping to see obviously a massive trickle down effect in terms of the Canadian landscape.
Fantastic. And I think there's enough there for a round two, Adam. Would you suggest, in terms of, we didn't touch too much upon what's happening upon the field, but it's been absolutely it's been really, really insightful for me to kind of sit down here today and speak about things and kind of flesh out an awful lot of what we would have spoke about over in person or just through passing on the fields countless times before. And as someone who's doing a great job, such as yourself, right through the Canadian game, let's hope it continues. We'll have to get you on for round two. But as you know, before we close, as is always, for those people listening, which I'm sure that are that slightly bit inspired listening to you speak about your journey today, Adam, what would be your one bit of key advice for them be if they were to follow in a similar path?
Yeah, first and foremost, Connor, I love a round two. Again, these conversations give me energy, and I love just talking about the game and the landscape and the environment. Talking about or speaking about what sort of advice I have for people and possibly aspiring coaches or working within the game. I think we possibly have heard it before, and I think you've told me multiple times, but like, don't skip steps. Make sure you truly, truly, truly embrace the opportunities that you have, and nothing is beneath you. Always make sure that you're taking every opportunity with both hands. I think just as a young coach, again, like I was alluding to before, there's so many times that I volunteered or I just showed up to the pitch to see if there was a coach that was needed at the club, and just to help out. And then from there, it was like, people started recognizing, oh, like, there's this coach here, like maybe, we'll give him a shot. And then you get just different opportunities, different opportunities, different opportunities. And then, at some point in time, there's going to be that breakthrough. For me, that breakthrough came with Southend United. But even when I was at that environment, there was so many different opportunities that I made sure that I took to, get to where I am today. And there's going to be a lot more opportunities that I need to take to continue to grow myself and evolve and you know, continue to have a very positive, or hopefully a very positive impact in the soccer environment and landscape within Canada, and hopefully one day maybe more globally, you know, the world, or at least North America. So we'll see where the journey continues.
Hopefully you'll be back to join us for round two. Adam, it's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you.